Hello, I'm Caleb Howard, and this is Tales from Sacred Texts. The world is built on stories. From the beginning of time, humans have immersed themselves in legends and myth. When God himself wanted to explain to us what he was like, he didn't push elaborate treatises, but instead told stories about humanity. In this podcast, I tackle the concept of religion through stories and legends. Told through a 21st century lens, I explain to religious and non-religious people alike the stories that lie at the very heart of the belief that maybe there is a God, and maybe he really is good. Today, we'll be doing the story of David's great-grandmother, Ruth, and we'll learn that the best way to find a husband has a whole lot to do with feet. And we'll dip our feet into Old Testament marriage law and find out that it, as well, has an uncomfortable amount of feet in it. This story is set in the midst of chaos. By all accounts, the story of Ruth is smack dab in the middle of the rule of the judges. Jephthah, Samson, and the others are active around this time. Some people put the story of Ruth only 4 years before the destruction of Gibeah, episode 112, a story filled with sexual assault, murder, and utter disregard for human, and especially women's, life. Moreover, the story of Ruth takes place only a stone's throw from the city of Gibeah. And despite the fact that her tribe took a position against the people of Gibeah, both the rest of the book of Judges and the story of Ruth shows that the poisonous attitudes that the enemy espoused had crept deep into the entire country. I know I've said that there's no such thing as Bible heroes, but Ruth is a different kind of protagonist. Throughout the Old Testament, most of the main characters are either leaders in battle or lead their tribe to a war-related victory. Ruth is different. Ruth isn't valuable for her skills in war or for leading her tribe to victory. She is simply valuable because she exists. Her loyalty and her humanity lie at the forefront of this story. So before I spoil any more details with my introduction, I'm going to get into the story. The sun was an amber ball of fire in the western horizon as Orpah laughed and skipped through the empty streets of Moab. So late, and you would figure she was going home, but Orpah was going to her best friend Ruth's house. Ruth opened the door a crack, and Orpah breezed in, a smile glowing across her face and spreading to Ruth's. Had Ruth heard about Mahlon? Half an hour later, Ruth was convinced. Orpah's boyfriend was really something special. She jokingly asked if Mahlon had a brother. Orpah was happy to inform her that he, in fact, did. He had a twin brother named Chilion. "Sounds tasty," Ruth giggled, but Orpah corrected her. No, they weren't talking about the soup. They were talking about a dude. Just as handsome as his brother, a bit more shy and brooding, but that was Ruth's type, wasn't it? I'm not exactly sure what the ancient world equivalent of a double date was. Probably along the lines of, I'll ask Mahlon to ask his brother to ask your father for you to wife. But maybe it was more than that. Some say that the people of Moab were a bit more loose with relationships, at least for the ancient world. It was probably something in between the two extremes. Whatever the details were, Ruth and Chilion fell in love, and they were married. Ruth knew pretty early on that Chilion was a foreigner. I mean, seriously, what kind of name was that? But she didn't care, because she loved him. And in time, she learned his story. His family had left a town called Bethlehem, part of one of the Hebrew tribes, because there was a shortage of food and his family was starving. They had settled here in this small Moabite town because of its opportunities for work. Ruth understood the story. Clawing out an existence from an unforgiving ground was the bread and butter of ancient times. But the trials and hardships had led them to this moment, to this opportunity to build a life together. Ruth grew to love his family as her own. She grew to love his culture as her own. She grew to love his God as her own. Chilion and Ruth, Orpah and Mahlon, and the parents of the brothers, Ahimelech and Naomi, grew closer and closer over the next several years until they were nearly inseparable. Alas, happily ever after wasn't in their cards. The rainy season was always a time of loathsome diseases, and death was a grim lottery that took whoever it wanted. Ahimelech was old and frail, and so when it took him, the family was saddened, but not shocked. They continued in peace for the next several years, Mahlon and Chilion doing well for themselves and giving their aging mother the life of comfort she deserved. What was shocking was when Mahlon became seriously ill and passed away. As he lay on his deathbed, Chilion began to show the signs of that same horrible disease. By the end of the month, the two women lay crying as they buried their husbands, and Naomi felt completely desolate. The only two people that she had left in the world were merely foreigners that had been tied to her sons by the cords of marriage. But after her sons passed, those cords had been severed, and Naomi knew that she would die here, penniless and alone. The daughters-in-law shook their heads vigorously. Their final duty to their husbands was to protect the aging Naomi. They wrapped their arms around her and promised to go with her to the ends of the earth if need be. Naomi sat up, tears welling in her eyes. She was moved. She thought about it for a while, but eventually told them that she would go back to her home country. There were distant relatives there. No one close, but perhaps they would take pity on her as blood relatives, however distant they may be. Orpah put her arm around one side of Naomi, and Ruth wrapped herself around the other. The two would accompany her home. Naomi shook her head. She'd thought about it, and she didn't want to steal their lives like this. Her daughters-in-law were still young, early 20s. How old did that make them when they were married? Never mind, Naomi didn't want to think about it. Culture was a weird thing. The point she was trying to make was that they didn't need to throw away the rest of their lives as outcasts in a strange land. She was going home to die. But they had so much life ahead of them. They could stay here and find new husbands, build themselves a new life. One day, this all would be a faded memory. Orpah and Ruth cried. This wasn't how they wanted their family to end. They weren't going to leave her. Naomi laughed bitterly. Everything had been taken from her. To tie themselves to her was to become beholden to her awful luck. And what could she do for them? If she had children tonight, it would take years for her babies to get old enough to marry the pair. The daughters put their hands on Naomi's shoulders and begged her to sit down. That last statement had been wild. Waiting for a guy to grow up from infanthood would be creepy. Naomi rolled her eyes. Yeah, she knew. She had just been on crack for like 15 seconds there. The point still was, though, that there was no future for them if they chose to cling to Naomi. They should go back to their people and try their luck there. Without a doubt, it would be better for them if they left her all alone. Orpah, crying, kissed Naomi goodbye, but Ruth refused. Her fate would be the same as Naomi's. If Naomi died in a shack, Ruth would die there too. If Naomi could never find her people and was all alone in the world, Ruth would be alone with her too. Ruth would never leave Naomi until the day she died. Ruth swore a sacred promise, calling God to witness her vow to never be separated from her mother-in-law. Naomi's eyes welled up with tears. She didn't think she deserved such love, and she struggled to accept it. But Ruth had refused to allow Naomi to push her away in self-preservation. Ruth's word was good. She would never leave. Naomi gradually allowed Ruth's words to sink in. She stopped asking Ruth to leave and basked in the warm glow of the feeling that she was not completely alone. Naomi hobbled into Bethlehem a few days later, her every muscle aching from the journey. She leaned on Ruth as she stepped into the city gates. In a few moments, she was surrounded by people asking questions and many of the old timers shouting with joy. It was Naomi! Naomi groaned as she heard her name cried with such joy. She wanted them to call her Bitter, because that's how her life had been ever since she buried her husband and sons. The people of the town shook their heads. They were overjoyed that she was back. She'd brought back a young woman with her. Whoever that was, they'd get to know her later, but she was back in her own country, and wasn't that something to be thankful for? Their enthusiasm was a well-intentioned attempt to comfort Naomi, but perhaps just a little insensitive. Naomi didn't care. She lived long enough that she had learned the attempts people made to cheer others up usually came from the right place, even if they came across as uncaring. It was the thought that counted. Naomi began building her life from the ground up, finding a very small home to live in. Ruth, upon learning the basics of Hebrew law, volunteered to go out and glean in the fields. The Hebrews had laws established by God that were designed to benefit the poor and marginalized. When men went through the fields to harvest the crops, they were to leave the edges unharvested, not to pick up any grain that they had dropped, and not go back over the fields a second time to harvest anything they'd missed. The remaining part of the field could be harvested by the gleaners, indigent people or immigrants who had been unable to plant their own crops. Ruth fell into that category on both counts. It was the beginning of the barley harvest, and Ruth was happy to be able to help the family in some capacity. She went out to the fields with a bright smile on her face and started working in the first one she happened to find. It was a lucky thing she chose that field because she meets an eccentric, mysterious man there, but that will be right after this. Boaz, a middle-aged man with a twinkling eye and smiling face, came striding into the field that morning and gestured toward Ruth. He hadn't seen her before. Did anyone know who she was? Naomi's story had been repeated throughout the city, full of praise for Ruth. And that was the version that Boaz heard in the field that morning. She was a hard worker, too. She'd been working hard all morning except for one very brief break. Boaz was impressed. He wanted to meet this woman. Boaz approached her, holding out his hand. She shrank back and bowed. Would he allow her to glean in his field? Of course, Boaz boomed. Had she planned to go anywhere else? Ruth began to speak, but Boaz didn't wait for her to finish. Don't. He didn't want it to be like this, but he had to warn her just what kind of men worked in many of the other fields. He didn't approve of the way they acted, of course, but she knew what it was like to be a woman in ancient times. She had an idea of what kind of stuff she might have to deal with, right? His voice softened a bit. He didn't mean for his words to be harsh or triggering, but he wanted to warn her. His men, they weren't that type. Boaz did not hire the kind of guys who took advantage of women. She had seen Boaz and his employees praising God together, hadn't she? Boaz promised that he hired only the best kind of people. He treated them well. She would be safe here. Just please, please don't try her luck somewhere else. She was free to drink the cold well water left out in jugs for the workers. And at lunchtime, he wanted her to come and eat with him and his employees. They would have bread dipped in vinegar. Ruth murmured her appreciation, though she wasn't particularly keen on a bread and vinegar meal. But she'd also been subsisting off dry grain for the past few months, so she was sure that it wouldn't be too bad. Ruth looked up at Boaz. Why was he treating her like this? Why? He chuckled. Because he'd heard how she treated Naomi. Honestly, the story of Ruth's willingness to stand by Naomi at any cost to herself had moved him. Not only did he want to help Naomi, He wanted to repay Ruth for her kindness to his family. You see, Ahimelech was his close relative, and he loved the man like an uncle. Naomi was family too, and after her struggles, she deserved to live her twilight years in comfort and companionship. He was infinitely thankful to Ruth for the sacrifices she had made on behalf of his family, so he was going to go out of his way to help her. He directed his employees to deliberately drop grain for Ruth to pick up. He wanted this woman to go home with plenty. And she did. Ruth came home to Naomi carrying a massive basket. Naomi gasped. That was more than a gleaner usually gathered in a week. Someone had to have taken special notice of Ruth. Who had it been? Ruth told Naomi the story of how she had met Boaz, and Naomi nearly broke down in tears again. God was looking out for them. Somehow, Boaz hadn't been able to help at the time of their first exile. Either Ahimelech had fled the town in an attempt to avoid charity, or Boaz had been financially ruined himself when Ahimelech and Naomi had been in great need. But whatever the case, he was certainly making up for it now. She explained the family tree and cited some Jewish law as to Boaz's rights and responsibilities. Ruth even told Naomi what Boaz said about sticking around his field and not going elsewhere. Naomi nodded. Boaz was trustworthy, and Israel was currently about as sane as the Wild West. She should definitely stick near Boaz's men and should definitely not go into someone else's field. Ruth nodded. She'd gathered that much. Tomorrow, she'd go back to Boaz's field. By the end of the summer, Ruth and Naomi had a lot of grain saved up for the winter and a fair bit of money to boot. Ruth had been consistently gathering much more than the average gleaner thanks to Boaz's kindness, and eating well besides. By now, she even almost liked bread and vinegar. It was the end of the harvest, and Boaz was preparing the grain for market. Him and his servants made a whole holiday out of it. They would work all day, and toward the end of the day, they would eat some of the finest food from the early harvests and kick back the equivalent of a couple beers. Ruth was to wait until... Ruth eyed Naomi. This was the most bizarre plan she'd ever heard. Was Naomi sure that it would work? Naomi wasn't. But if Boaz had a foot fetish, liked attractive women, or both, their plan had a fighting chance. The only thing that remained was to act on it. As Boaz became tipsy from the drinks, Ruth crept over to him. She had washed herself earlier that day, put on perfume, and dressed in her favorite robe. She watched Boaz lay down on the ground and fall asleep, covered with his favorite blanket. Ruth lifted up the blanket and crawled underneath, curling up next to his feet. Boaz awoke with a start as he saw a woman lying next to his feet. That was pretty weird. Okay, so no foot fetish, Ruth mumbled. What? Who was she? She was Ruth. He remembered her, right? The girl who had come back with Naomi and who had worked in his fields? And she liked to marry him. Technically, it was his duty, per the Hebrew religious law. Boaz's face reddened, and he blushed as he saw the attractive woman throwing herself at him. He was honestly surprised. He guessed he should have known about the whole religious law thing, but he hadn't really looked into it. Besides, he would have figured Ruth would have gone after someone younger and much more attractive than a middle-aged guy like himself with a dad bod. Ruth shook her head. Boaz was a good guy. He cared for the poor and the foreigners. He was empathetic and put himself into others' shoes. And he looked out for the people who needed protection the most. He was full of joy and constantly praised God. And yeah, she knew it was just basic human decency, but he had protected her from the crazies and had not taken advantage of her. Which shouldn't be special, but barely anyone seemed to care about those things in their day and age. Boaz nodded. Because they were going the religious route, Boaz had to follow the law carefully. There was one guy he had to question first. If that guy chose to marry Ruth, well, that guy would have the right. But if not, then Boaz would definitely be down to marry her. That's a weird custom, Ruth said. Yes, it is, Boaz nodded. It's complex and there's a lot of reasons behind it, but it would take a whole podcast episode to dive into. And I'm not even sure what a podcast is. Boaz threw up his hands. Okay, Ruth nodded. She would take his word for it. But just to double check, did she have everything correct? He had to talk to one more guy, but if that guy turned it down, the marriage was a go? Boaz answered in the affirmative, and Ruth smiled. She really did like the guy. Boaz had Ruth spend the night lying under the stars with him because it wasn't safe to go home. As the sun began to rise, he told Ruth to return to Naomi before anyone saw them and started to gossip. But first, he asked for her shawl. He tied it into a knot and turned it into a sack, which he filled to the top with barley. That was for Naomi. When Ruth returned home, Naomi asked her about how the plan had gone. Surprisingly well, Ruth replied. Like, really, sneaking up to some guy, crawling under his feet in the middle of the night, and asking him to marry her seemed like the weirdest thing in all the world. But it had worked, for the most part. Boaz was still questioning whether he could legally marry her, and he had to talk to some other guy, but otherwise, the whole thing was a go. Naomi smiled at Ruth. From the beginning, Naomi had been almost certain that the plan would be successful. As for the question about whether Boaz could, she knew the man well enough to know that this wouldn't be a question for long. When Boaz had work to do, he went about it tirelessly until he had accomplished his task. She knew that Boaz would get everything figured out before bedtime that evening. And she was right. Boaz knew that the town officials always sat at the gate in the early morning to serve as witnesses to transactions. So at the faintest crack of dawn, Boaz went to the town gate. About an hour later, he was leaning against the town gate, standing and gossiping, when the guy that he needed to question walked by. Boaz reached out and grabbed the man by the shoulder. My brother. There is some business the two of them need to discuss. Boaz's relative embraced Boaz and smiled. What was going on? Well, as he knew, Naomi had recently returned. She was going to sell the farmland that she and her late husband had shared, as she was poor and really had no use for it anymore. But the relative also knew that Hebrew law required that the nearest relative purchase that piece of property so that it stayed in the family. Boaz was perfectly happy to buy the land, but since the relative had been closer by blood to Ahimelech, he was giving him first bite at the apple. The relative smiled and thanked Boaz. He'd take the land. Yes, well, here was the kicker. Had he seen Ruth, the cute young woman walking around town that had come back with Naomi? If he bought the land, he'd have to marry her. To us today, this sounds pretty ridiculous, but it was well-known law to the relative, who began to shake his head. That was a no-can-do. He had a wife already, and he didn't want to share the inheritance that he had planned to leave to his children. Boaz was single. He could do it. Before Boaz even agreed to purchase the land and marry the girl, the relative was already taking off his sandal. Ugh. Boaz groaned. What was it with the foot stuff? He'd had way too much of that today already. The relative looked at Boaz. What was the foot stuff from earlier? That sounded like some spicy drama he wanted to hear. Anyway, Boaz was crazy. When you made a business deal, you gave the other guy one of your shoes. That was the established cultural practice. Boaz looked around. And how did that work? He was wearing his favorite pair of sandals, and now he had to part with one of them, and his feet were way bigger than the relative's anyway, so this was not going to be an even trade. The whole sandal thing was just super chaotic because both parties lost what was probably their only pair of shoes. The relative shrugged. He guessed people rich enough to be making these kinds of high-level business deals had enough money to just go out and buy another pair. But if he had known that Boaz would have been proposing this deal, he would have worn his old pair of sandals today. The relative tried to get off the sandal topic as fast as possible because he knew that the law said that technically Ruth got to take off his shoe, spit in his face, and insult him in public. Then he'd have to change his last name to the Family of the Unsandaled, which weird and it sucked. It sounded funny, but it was no joke. As it was, Boaz was practically begging the relative to refuse the marriage because Boaz really wanted to marry her and he knew that she wanted to marry him. The relative was in the best possible position and he knew it because Boaz apparently did not remember or care about the law. So the relative just took off his shoe and thrust it in Boaz's face. He wanted to get the deal done as soon as possible before anyone invoked the actual law and made him go through the humiliating spit sandal ritual. Half an hour later, the deal was done, and the elders at the gate were congratulating Boaz on his upcoming marriage. Though they were talking about it, and it was a bit creepy that he'd been calling her my daughter throughout the entire Book of Ruth. They had kind of noticed that, but ignored it when doing the podcast because it creeped them out so much. Boaz shook his head. Podcast? People kept on talking about it. He didn't know what a podcast was. But my daughter was just a polite form of address for a young woman in those days. There was nothing actually familial about it. The elders breathed again. That made them feel better. Congratulations! They hoped that this woman would be like Rachel, Leah, or Tamar. Boaz clapped his hands. Progressive that they had mentioned a woman who dressed up like a prostitute and had sex with her own father-in-law in that list. But he thought that Ruth would be a good wife of her own sort without having to live up to some famous woman from hundreds of years ago. That's what Tamar did? The elders gasped. And they agreed. They should be judging her on her own merits, but they kind of liked padding the runtime with poetry and cultural references. They were old men whose one job was knowing history. Could they show their skills off for the Bible readers for 2 more seconds? There was a quiet ceremony a few days later, and of the people in attendance, none were happier than Naomi. Her face glowed as she saw that Ruth had finally found a home again. It had been God who did it all, Naomi knew. Exactly 1 year later, Naomi and her elderly friends sat together at the market, discussing the birth of Boaz and Ruth's firstborn son. They retold the story of the romance and celebrated the new life. They smiled and spoke of their hope that one day God's praises would be sung again throughout the nation, not just among Boaz's employees, but throughout the streets. They had seen what God had done for Naomi and Ruth, and they smiled. Sometimes people did get a happily ever after. That's where our story ends. In time, the firstborn son had a son of his own and then a grandson. His grandson was named David, as in the guy we just spent 3 episodes on, the famous King David. All because some foreign woman refused to abandon her mother-in-law and instead bravely embraced a new future in a new country. I have to confess that out of the stories I've told so far in this podcast, this is one of the ones I've taken the most liberties with. The biggest thing I did was added an element of romance into the story of Boaz and Ruth. A lot of the book is pretty stiff, portraying Boaz as just doing his duty as a relative, and Ruth just looking out for her own well-being by proposing marriage to the old rich guy who was required by law to marry her. But there are traces of love throughout the book that I weaved into the story. Boaz expresses shock and surprise that Ruth was interested in him, even though there were younger, hotter men in town, and I took that to mean that there were many men she could have pursued but eschewed from Boaz. And it makes sense. Boaz may have had a dad bod, but he was kind, considerate, and treated others well when many of the men nearby were caught up in the chaos and brutality of that society. The more I read between the lines, the more I saw love blossoming between the most unlikely of people. A poor young immigrant woman and a wealthy middle-aged man, both who lived lives that were different. Lives in search of God and full of compassion toward others in a society that was decidedly uncompassionate. The more I saw the picture the story painted, the more I saw mutual attraction blossoming between the pair. So I wrote it in. I think the story of Ruth also paints a beautiful picture of love and loyalty between family, whether born or found. Naomi was certainly feeling completely alone when her husband and sons died, and Ruth could have chosen the easy way out and built a family in her own familiar homeland. but because Ruth saw Naomi as family, she refused to abandon her, whatever the cost. Instead, she threw in her lot with her aged mother-in-law and reaped a reward she could have never foreseen. Pun intended. But I think the biggest takeaway from the story of Ruth is that it portrays ordinary life on a level that we rarely see in the Old Testament. There's usually some sort of kingdom-shattering cataclysm that the Bible characters face. A one-on-one battle with a giant, but if you lose, your whole country gets enslaved. A king walking before a tyrant, and if she makes a wrong move, the Holocaust happens 2,400 years earlier. A city shelters a group of perverts, and the entire country has to fix the problem before an entire region of the country becomes a sanctuary for incredible evil. Ruth isn't like that. Ruth is about ordinary people who get out of bed in the morning and make small choices throughout the day. Boaz could have been just like everyone else, but he paid attention to his workers and recognized a scared immigrant among them. He hired people who he could trust, even if it lowered his bottom line a bit to do so. He generously repaid Ruth's kindness to his relatives. Boaz woke up in the morning to help bring joy to those around him. As for Ruth, she was fiercely loyal. She could have chosen to leave her mother-in-law and no one would have blamed her for it. But she knew that Naomi was suffering and she wanted to lighten the load. Ruth could have stayed home, claiming ignorance of the culture, but she went out to work in the blistering sun because she wanted to offer a little help to Naomi. Together, Boaz and Ruth, two ordinary people living their own lives to bless other people, ended up getting their efforts returned to them tenfold. The book of Ruth calls us to do the same, to live lives that reject society's disinterest in others and make sacrifices to show care and appreciation for the people around us. We don't have to win some battle or go on some epic quest to etch our place in history. All we have to do is be kind. Give us days to be filled with small rebellions, senseless, brutal acts of kindness from us all. Those lyrics from one of my favorite songs, Small Rebellions by Jars of Clay, might be the best summary of the Book of Ruth. The smallest rebellions against a world of thoughtlessness might, in fact, send the biggest shockwaves. Boaz and Ruth's small rebellions against a disinterested society led to the birth of David and Solomon, the greatest kings Israel ever knew. Further on down the line, Jesus himself became one of their descendants. Little things make a big difference. That's all for this week. Next time, we're going to finish up the book of Daniel with two stories of God's people bravely resisting tyrant kings and God stepping in to protect them from the backlash. We'll see what happens when you conspire to get your political rival eaten alive by a bunch of hungry lions, and what happens when you're an absolutely stupid king who can't read the room. Hey, you end up serving your best friend as a snack. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate every second you devote to my podcast, and it means so much to me. I've been listening back to the earlier episodes and realizing just how much I've grown in my storytelling abilities, and I'm so proud of you all for joining me on this journey. If you could spare a moment, please go over to Spotify to check out the cool new artwork and give us a 5-star rating to get us some clout over there. Finally, can you please share my podcast with your friends? I'm always excited to get new listeners. Credits to myself for script writing and intro music. Credits to Evoke Music for accompanying music and the closing theme. Special thanks to the royalty-free music on Pixabay and YouTube for providing additional accompanying music and to Anchor Podcast for making this whole thing possible. Finally, credits to the audience for keeping this whole thing going. Have a great weekend, everyone, and see you next time.